Three, two, one. We are live for a new episode of That Chick Podcast. I am Fred Lambert, your host. And as usual, I'm joined by Seth Wintraub. How are you doing this week, Seth?
I'm good.
All right. Probably better than me. Just came back from a nice 10 hours of travel today. I'm probably sounding even more heavy on the noise as usual. I think I'm feeling a little bit sick, but I'm going to power through for you guys because that's how much I love this podcast and I love you guys. and we have some cool things to talk about today. Maybe not good news to start with. We're going to discuss the Tesla delivery estimate. So in the US, Tesla is still the major player when it comes to EV volumes. They still are the difference maker in the market. So it makes a big difference for EV adoption. And now this quarter is kind of weird. Like Tesla has been a growth story like every quarter. Year-over-year growth, at the very least, most often than not quarter-to-quarter growth, though there's been some exception and there's been like some like very specific event that has negatively affected sales, nothing too crazy, we're used to it. But for the most part, Tesla keeps increasing production, and even though the demand side of things have been rough over the last year, there's been a lot of price cuts to match the demand to the production, they've been able to do it. But now we have a different situation this quarter, not necessarily for the demand, but for both demand issues, both demand concern, I should say, and production issues at the same time. So what happened this week is there was a several consecutive downgrades in terms of delivery estimates from Wall Street, from analysts in general. So if you remember last quarter, Q4 2023, Tesla delivered a record number of 484,000 vehicles. That was a 20% year-over-year growth. And for comparison, if you want to do a Q1 to Q1 comparison, Tesla delivered 422,000 vehicles in Q1 2023. Now, just a few days ago, just starting off the week, the delivery estimate was 479,000 vehicles for Tesla in Q1 2024. We should have like a decent idea of it with a quarter ending in just a few weeks. And but that now that estimate has just dropped like crazy this week because people are revising it. Because 479,000, that would have been nice. That would have been a very good year-over-year increase. A sequential small decrease, but nothing too crazy. Nothing completely unusual for a Q4 to Q1. Though last year, Q4 to Q1, Tesla actually did increase delivery. So not a great look there. But now what happened this week, you had Deutsche Bank reducing their estimate to 427,000 deliveries for Q1, which would be a massive drop. You have UBS, which was already below the consensus at 466,000, dropped that to 432,000 units. And there was a bunch of other ones too, maybe like smaller than UBS and Deutsche Bank, which are bigger Wall Street firms. But what I'm seeing right now is like most estimate are between 425,000 units and 425 and 435,000 units for Q1, which would be a big drop from Q4 and basically like just a slight like 2-point growth for year over year, which is completely unusual for Tesla. And bigger concern, it might be the story of the year. So it might be like it might keep going throughout the year, which is a concern. Now, these are estimates. So I'm not even sure that this is right now. I'm just reporting what's happening. I do know that there are some factors at play here that did drive these things on the production side of things at the very least. One, the Chinese New Year, that always affects deliveries for Tesla, affects production and deliveries. So this is no exception this year. But that's still same thing happened in Q1 2023, obviously. Then the other thing is obviously the more like exceptional thing is the arson attack that we talked about last week in Gigafactory Berlin. They did restart production this week on Monday or Tuesday, something like that. And it was basically just over a week of production shutdown. We know that Tesla was between 5,000 and 6,000 units a week of production for the Model Y. But it's probably a bigger effect than that, because obviously when you restart production, you don't restart right away at 5,000 or 6,000 units. It takes some time. And that's probably what's happening here. So yeah, people are accounting for that. There's also some on the demand side, there's issues, but at the same time, Tesla has always been able to just adjust pricing and match their production. So it might be more of a production side of things. Then there's the Cybertruck. That's a wild card, but I don't even think Cybertruck can compensate for the Gigafactory Berlin, right?
Oh, for sure not. I mean, the numbers are so low there. And also, margins at the beginning of production aren't typically that great.
Yeah, margin is one thing. Margin, that's going to be the earnings next month.
Right.
But I think now people are more looking at like the delivery numbers, production numbers coming out the first week of April, which Cybertruck's going to help a little bit, but we don't even know how much. So yeah, it's something to look at. If anything, it might even be like a good thing for Tesla shareholders at this point, because lowering expectation, if Tesla can beat that, it's going to be a good story for the stock, which needs good stories these days. but something to keep an eye on here, because the not looking good right now, production-wise, delivery-wise.
Will Elon be happy if it's 420,000 deliveries?
420,000 would still be below these very low estimates, so I don't know.
But it's a fun number.
I'm so getting tired and sick. I didn't even get your joke there. A little weed joke from Seth. Tesla goes, all right. So this is something that we've been reporting on before the delivery started with the Cybertruck. Tesla, in its contract, when you switch your reservation to an order, in your order agreement, they call it, there's been a warning that Tesla was going to go after you if you decided to resell your vehicle. And the warning was quite severe. They talked about like suing you for up to $50,000, which most legal experts don't believe this is going to be something enforceable. But they say that they also might blacklist you, so they won't sell you any other car after that. So that's more enforceable, because obviously Tesla can do whatever they want. They can sell their cars to people or not to other people. That's their own decision.
Although that is weird. I don't think Chevy or Ford is not selling to certain people.
Well, Ford did do it for the GT, for the Ford GT.
Oh yeah, there was that one story, something about
Yeah, John Cena like did it, and they went after John Cena, and he had to apologize and everything. So there's an idea, but that's like, okay, the GT is a low volume vehicle. The Cybertruck, it will not be. It is like right now, but it will not be. It will be a high volume vehicle, so it will not be a collector item like the GT is. But I guess there's more demand right now because the production is limited. So there is an opportunity to make some money for people that want it quicker, and yeah, it's been working. We reported last week on someone selling it for $244,000, and that was $244,000, which was already like more than twice the price of the truck. That was for a dealer's auction. So that means that a dealer bought it, and then the dealer is now trying to resell it. So I think it's an Orlando Porsche dealer that's trying to resell that now for more than $244,000. I think they listed it for like $270,000. They're trying to make like $40,000, $30,000 out of this. There's one right now on Doug DeMero's website, Cars and Bids.
Cars and Bids, yeah.
Yeah. On Doug's website, they started a listing at like $115,000, something like that. It's already going up. So people are doing it. And one of the person who did it, and actually that guy, that guy didn't even sell his truck. He just listed it. So he hasn't sold yet, but Tesla saw it on the auction website. And they saw his VIN number, and they saw that he had other Cybertruck on reservation, and they canceled his other Cybertruck reservation. And they told him that they reimbursed him the $100 per reservation on his 2-order reservation. But they told him that if he tried to reserve again, they will take that money, then they won't deliver the truck.
Crazy.
Which is pretty wild. I saw the chief engineer of the Cybertruck on Twitter kind of give an explanation for that, saying that they want to make the trucks for people that enjoy it and not for people that makes money off of it, which I get. Like, I get it. But at this point, I would be worried if the production would be super limited, just like the GT, if you're like making a LaFerrari or something like that. I understand at that level, because you might be taking it away from someone else that did put a reservation and couldn't get in the production. But now everyone that wants a Cybertruck will be able to get a Cybertruck at some point, like in the next year or two. Like,
also, like, what happens if you have like a, you know, family emergency or something and you need the money? Like, you should be able to sell something that you bought. Like,
excellent point. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah. There has to be like legitimate reason. Of course, that now you can say, okay, yeah, but it's convenient that you're now making money off of that transaction, right, rather than just reselling it. But at the same time, you're not sell it for what the market is buying it right now.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of rabbit holes you can go down there, but.
You had a theory on like, oh, maybe Tesla doesn't want like other automakers, because some people that are buying that are other automakers.
Yeah, didn't Ford buy one of those or something?
Yeah, Ford bought one. But I think what kills that theory on that front is like Elon said, yeah, that's a good move from Ford to buy it. So unless he's saying it's a good move, but he would try to prevent it at the same time, I don't know. I'm not in his head and I don't want to be. But it's a good theory at least.
Yeah.
All right, speaking of getting the Cybertruck sooner, Tesla launched a new program. If you're a long-term Tesla shareholder, you can get the Cybertruck sooner. Again, we've been saying that for a while now. I mean, past Model S, there's not really been a real reason to reserve the Cybertruck early or to reserve any Tesla vehicle early. It works a little bit. Maybe if you're in California or not Texas, maybe it makes more sense. Maybe you'll be able to be one of the first to get it. But if you're anywhere else, like, there's always other things that get at play. And obviously, a lot of people have been saying, oh, yeah, like, there's no other way to get the Cybertruck early than if you had a first-day reservation or whatever. But we've seen, like, Justin Bieber, Lady Gaga, Kim Kardashian get it. I mean, unless they are all buying it off of other people or they were all first day reservation holder, which I doubt. I think there might be some things going on. But anyway, now so let me get into the exact details here so I'm not talking out of my bottom. So you need to, okay, reservation holder before March 2024. So makes no sense. Okay. Like, there's literally 5 years of reservation before that. Not taking delivery yet, okay, obviously. Each person would provide the brokerage statement showing that you own Tesla shares on February 28, 2021. So you have to have been owning Tesla share for 3 years, and you have to have been own at least 500 shares as of February
29, 2024. Significant.
So you cannot be like Joe Blow with a few shares. Like, you have to be like at least a significant investment in Tesla. Significant investment for the average person, obviously. So yeah, this is that you can speculate on what that means. That might be Tesla really wanting to give a gift, well, or give like an advantage to their shareholders, to thank their shareholders. But at the same time, it's weird because then you get ahead. Like, you can have reserved a Cybertruck earlier this month and get a faster delivery than someone that reserved it first day. So that's a weird one, because there's still people that reserve first day that haven't have the opportunity to convert a reservation in an order. I'm just saying. So it has brought in the theory that Tesla might be having some issues converting reservation into orders, which is a fair theory when you take into account the fact that Tesla is selling only right now 100,000 and 120,000 version of the truck, Founder Series, built-in packages.
A lot less range than people were anticipating, twice the price that people were anticipating.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that could have negatively affected demand on that front. I don't think, I wouldn't, like, Tesla supposedly had, for sure, has over 1 million reservation, supposedly had close to 2 million, if not more than 2 million. So I wouldn't have think that it would be a problem at this stage, but sounds like a lot of people at least don't want to pay that kind of money for the Cybertruck. So Ian Smith just did the math. 500 shares right now at 163, because the stock just took a beating this week too. It's $81,000. So it's not too bad, but it's less than the cost of Cybertruck.
Yeah, I feel like when this came out, though, it was closer to 200. So that'd be 100,000.
Yeah.
But yeah, anyway.
At least closer to 190, at least.
Right.
Yeah. All right, this is something I just posted today after I was perusing Tesla's career page section. I saw this. It looks like Tesla is really going after Elon's concept of no service is the best service. This is something that Elon has been saying for a while, that, you know, especially was saying it amid Tesla having some more serious service capacity issues, especially in 2021, 2022. Tesla was growing at an insane pace and its service infrastructure was not growing as fast. This has calmed down a bit because during these years, Tesla has invested in Villain service, growing its mobile fleet like crazy, increasing the capacity of the fleet to cover more service issues, and also adding service centers, capacity service centers, building bigger centers with those stations that can handle specific issues faster. Been a lot of improvement on that front. I've been hearing a lot less from Tesla owners saying that they have issues getting service, though there's still a specific issues at specific regions where you can see some decent wait times. But also Tesla's growth has slowed down last year, let's be honest, and that also helped catching up the service capacity. But now Tesla is addressing this issue specifically with a new hire. They're looking for a senior manager for a new program called Zero Service. And in that program, Tesla specifically says that the new job is going to be to identify and eliminate the reasons for the cars to need service. At Tesla, we believe that the best service is no service. We're looking for a highly motivated senior manager to join our service operation organization and lead the team responsible. So it's a new team that they're building here to identify and eliminate the reason for our cars to require service. So theoretically, there could be no service, Tesla service. Like, we fire all Tesla technicians in the future. I'm kidding, obviously. Even if you really make your car like as reliable as possible, there's always going to be a need for service to some degree. Someone posted my article on Reddit, and a Tesla technician like posted, and it's like, oh shit, my issue, is my job at risk here? It's like, I don't think that Tesla's current size of service capacity is going to ever be reduced. Like, Tesla's fleet continue to grow, continue to age, obviously. So even if like this team does its job like perfectly, I still think that Tesla's service capacity is going to grow a little bit at the very least. It will never shrink, in my opinion. But still an interesting new initiative from Tesla with a brand new team that's going to try to make the cars more reliable. Quality control, I assume, is going to be involved. Interesting stuff. All right. This was a big news. This came out actually just after last week's podcast, because we did it a little bit early when I was in Greece. So it's a week old news, but we're still going to discuss because we didn't do it in a podcast. It's a pretty cool image. I did that with my girlfriend on Midjourney. Nice. I didn't know what image to use for like a cable extension on the, because it doesn't exist. So we asked on Midjourney, and they did like a long Tesla cable supercharger. It's pretty.
I was gonna say the Model S looks pretty weird.
Yeah, they don't like even like you like the Tesla. They cannot do like full like straight on Tesla logo. Like they always have to modify a little bit. They cannot do it perfect. So even the Tesla logo is a little bit different. I think the inverse two letters. But still, like, it's exactly what I wanted. Like, it's a long supercharger cable. Because Tesla did confirm that they were making a NACS to NACS extension cable. So in the page where Tesla explained what you do if you are charging a non-Tesla vehicle at a supercharger station and you cannot reach the charge port while parked normally, Tesla shows this little graphic here. Tells you not to go like this, not to go perpendicular, but to go parallel to the line, but to straddle the line, basically going a little bit over it is. It's a controversial issue, but like Tesla believe this is the best solution right now. Though it did note in the same page now that we are working on a NACS to NACS extension cable, which will be available for purchase in the future. No timeline offered. So I don't know what to think about that. Obviously, this sounds like this problem solved. Extension cable, you can have the charge port on the old other side. It will work. However, you need to purchase it. So now you need to bet on the fact that someone will prefer to pay money to get an extension cable than to be the asshole that parks, that blocks another stall at the supercharger station, which I'm sure some people will.
Not many.
Not many, as my, especially at the price. It's not going to be cheap. Like, I don't even know how they're going to do it exactly, like with the liquid cool and the cable.
Yeah, that's my question. Like, there's those cables are really either really thick, or they have the cooling liquid going through them, which you can't do with an extension cord. So it'll
maybe a lower capacity.
Right, cut it down.
Maybe
to 100.
Maybe a thicker cable at that level to transfer the capacity. But I don't know. But it does make sense that Tesla has this product at the very least.
Yep.
But maybe something more like there has to be a solution to have it at the charger, and you can just unlock it, put it back, maybe link to the credit card. So if you don't put it back, like, you could be charged for it. I don't know. Like, there has to be like a better solution than have everyone buy it, because it's not a great buy, because you probably don't need it that often. It's probably going to be expensive. I don't know. It's not a perfect solution, but I think the product should exist.
Either that, or they should make a couple longer cables at every station, kind of reserved for the...
Yeah, do some retrofit, basically, on the existing V2.
I mean, the Cybertruck, like, you have to pull that thing in pretty tight to charge it. That's true. So maybe they should be, making their cables longer already.
Yeah. Yeah, it would make sense. They're already producing those cables for V4. I don't know. Maybe I'm talking. I don't know what I'm talking about. And the V4 cables are not retrofittable on V3s. I don't know, but you could just put the V4 cable on the V3 if that's possible. Problem solved. Maybe it's a big investment, obviously, but it will help. All right. Next piece of news, like, that came out earlier this week, and this was a big controversial piece of news here that I want to be careful the way I address it, because this was one of the most publicized autopilot crash, fatal autopilot crash ever. One of the first one too. There was the one in Florida before that, obviously, that was very tragic too with the truck. But this one was a little bit even more controversial, because the autopilot clearly like did something wrong, but the driver was also doing something wrong at the same time. And now this case is finally going to trial. And this is the third trial in a row going, the third wrongful death trial in a row going to trial in California after Tesla won the last two. So, you know, logic would tell you that Tesla is going to be winning this one too. But you have to take into account that the lawyers this time have the benefit of having learned from the last two trial, and they are taking a different approach. And this crash happened in 2018. So the discovery process and all that has been going a long time. So for those who don't remember, this is the fatal accident of, sorry, I forget his name. I think it's Walter. Walter Yuan. He was an Apple engineer. And the accident happened on the highway, I think on the left lane, and the autopilot screwed up and went into the median. In an exit, and he crashed his Model X into a crash accentuator. That would be making the crash worse. No,
yeah, but if I recall correctly, there was a crash.
It was missing.
Yeah, there was a crash like a week before, and
What do you crash? Attenuator. Yeah, that's a better word. So there used to be a crash attenuator on the median at the barrier, and it was not there. So it crashed straight into the barrier, or the remains of the crash attenuator that used to be there for the crash. He died, unfortunately, of his injuries a few hours later at the hospital. So clearly the autopilot like did a mistake. You don't go into the median. Makes no sense. Bad. But you cannot automatically put the blame on it, because Tesla says that you need to be paying attention. And there is clear evidence that he was not paying attention.
Was he playing a video game or watching
a video? There was evidence that he was on his phone. I don't remember if it was a video game or not, but the phone logs did show that he was on his phone. So obviously not paying attention. But even then, I think there was like 3 or 4 seconds between going into the median and the crash. Which obviously, if you're paying attention, 3 and 4 seconds is plenty of time to adjust. Like, especially if you're like on the left lane going into the crash, it makes no sense. You can just go back into your lane. It makes no sense. So this, like, because Tesla fans, sometimes they go crazy on that stuff. They just like screw the guy's family. They just have their money and all that. He wasn't paying attention. It's his fault. No one is disputing that. Not even the lawyers here in this case. They're not disputing that. That's what's interesting about this case. This case is taking a different approach where they are focusing on Tesla, one, knowing that there was a problem with Autopilot doing that, the median, which I think that's not even in dispute. Like, I remember, you remember the early days of Autopilot set, like the Autopilot would often take exit that didn't exist or whatnot. So it's that's a common issue. But the more interesting part of it is that the case is focusing also on Tesla basically influencing the overconfidence of drivers, making it so that they would not pay attention. And this is a controversial issue by itself. I'm the first going to admit that, because like you cannot dumb proof everything to the point that everyone is like going to be safe. Like everyone's going to abuse the system. So can Tesla really be responsible for someone abusing the system? However, legal experts are saying that Tesla did have a responsibility to look into the foreseeable abuse of the system and address that. And based on the discovery of this case, it does the plaintiff do claim to have evidence that Tesla did not do that, did not look into the foreseeable abuse of the system. Now, I'm not a legal expert, so I'm saying like I don't know if there's really a case there. If you can say that if you don't look into that, then you're liable. I don't know that. I'm just saying it's an interesting case because we do know that there is a level of issues with people being overconfident with Tesla's ADAS system. That's I think everyone can admit that to a degree. Like some people get overconfident in the system. To what degree is Tesla responsible for that? Obviously, like Elon's comments are a big thing on that. And that's what the last time we reported on this case, actually, I don't know if you remember this set, it was last year as part of the discovery process, which it was insane. Tesla's lawyer. So the plaintiff lawyers said that they brought up a bunch of Elon's statement about full self-driving, about autopilot at the time as example of why Tesla owners could become overconfident in the system. And Tesla's response to that, it was like, we cannot even know for sure that these comments were from Elon because they could have been deep fake.
That was amazing.
Yeah, which is an insane thing to do. Like, first of all, like they didn't even point out like this is deep fake. This is not deep fake. Like we know that Elon has said some plenty of things about full self-driving that have been over that could induce overconfidence in people. And I don't think there was ever any allegation that those were deep fakes. Like, why would you bring that up at the time of a trial? It's so weird. Or at the discovery before a trial. Now, there's still some issue with this trial. It's I think it's next week that they're going to start figuring out what evidence they can show to the jury. So that's going to be the whole deal, basically, like depending on what they can show. Because the other interesting thing that came out this week with this trial is an email from John McNeil, who you might remember as Tesla's first president. I think it was first president.
Long time ago.
Yeah, a while ago. So before this crash, I think it was in 2016, he sent an email to Elon and Sterling Anderson, who was the head of Autopilot at the time. He sent an email saying, I got so comfortable under Autopilot that I ended up blowing by exit because I was immersed in emails or calls. And then in quotes, he says, I know it's not recommended use. So basically, it shows that even Tesla's own employees are abusing, or his own executive are abusing the system. So it shows that Tesla knew that people could abuse the system. Now, what are they doing to remedy that? And that's going to be the juice of this case here. And they're going to obviously focus on a few things like Tesla's lack of driver monitoring at the time, the fact that they didn't launch the cabin-facing camera driver monitoring until 2021, 3 years after this accident. Maybe they can use also the recall that happened last year in December that also focused on driver alerts. So you could argue that now that Tesla had to improve the driver alerts to tell them to pay attention, and that was not there in 2018, that could maybe be a point. I don't even know. What I found interesting in this case, again, is that it's going to focus on, does Tesla have a role to play in autopilot user, full self-driving user being overconfident in Tesla system. I think that's, there's, it's worth at least discussing, at least, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it, you know, every word that comes out of Elon's mouth is basically like, full self-driving is a miracle. Like, you know, that we have lots of retweets of people who are driving, you know, without their hands and that kind of stuff. So I think that there's a case to be made, but I don't know. I mean, I kind of feel like the Tesla should just go, look, this is not full self-driving. This is, you know, an assist, and you have to keep your hand on the wheel and you have to look forward, and that's what this is. And we don't know when the next thing is going to come out.
But we already sell it to you.
Yeah. And, but you bought it like 3 years ago.
So, you know, so all of these things, they play a little bit of factor, which is, I think it's worth discussing at least. All right, Tesla India. That happened today. Tesla India might finally be happening. If you've been following this whole saga, like, this is interesting because India is the biggest market in which, biggest auto market in which Tesla is not operating yet. And the reason for that is that Tesla wants to do what it always do when it enters a new market, is just first the import vehicles from their other factories, their foreign factories, and establish a service infrastructure, sales infrastructure, supercharger infrastructure, start building a market there. And then obviously, if the market is big enough, they start manufacturing there like they did in China, like they did in Europe. But India want Tesla to start with that, and Tesla couldn't really, and Tesla couldn't just bypass that because they have significant import duties for new vehicles in India. So Tesla wanted them to reduce their import duties or waive them completely before they establish a factory in the country, so that they can build up the market and then do the factory. So for the last 3 years, basically, they've been going back and forth trying to find a compromise, and never happened. Though last year it looks like it was getting closer when Elon met with the Prime Minister Modi in the U.S. Right after the meeting, Elon says that Tesla would make an investment in India as soon as humanly possible. So that was a few months ago. And today the news is that the government released a new scheme, they call it, to accelerate EV manufacturing investment in the country. So basically the scheme reduced the import duties to 15%, a much more reasonable rate, for EVs valued at more than $35,000 for 5 years. But there are three main requirements to get access to that deal. One, you need to make an investment of a minimum of the equivalent of $500 million. Two, you make a commitment to build a factory in an EV factory in India, and you need to get to production within 3 years. At that 3 years level, that commitment is a 25% localization of parts. So it's not too bad. But you need to ramp that up to 50% in 5 years, within the 5 years, which is, again, the 5 years that you get to also sell your vehicles at the 15% import duties. Finally, there's a limit on those vehicles being imported to 40,000 total, 8,000 units per year. So not the greatest deal in the world, no, but a decent compromise. Like, now, basically, Tesla could build a service center or multiple service centers in the country, start building a supercharger network, start selling cars, Model 3 and Model Ys, up to 8,000 a year while they make their investment into building a factory slowly, so that by the time that the factory is starting to go into production, they already have a local presence, a local market build up from their vehicle importation. Makes sense to me.
Yeah, the numbers are just low, like 8,000 a year for 5 years. That's quite not a ton of cars. Maybe they focus on the high end at the beginning and, you know, sell some Model S's and X's import wise. It's got to be above 30K.
Yeah, 35,000. But what I've been seeing from Tesla's most recent market launches, sometimes, most of the time, they launch the open orders for Model 3, Model Y. They don't even open orders for Model S and X, especially in those market that have a lower GDP per capita, like the Southeast Asia market and all that. Yeah. Malaysia recently, Thailand recently, and all that. So I don't know.
I would imagine they would launch they would start building the Model 2 or whatever we're calling the low cost Tesla there. As well.
Yeah, that actually, there was a news that came out of that a few months ago that the deal that, because Tesla has, so obviously the announcement this week is not about Tesla specifically. It opens the door to Tesla, but it is rumored that Tesla negotiated that deal with the government, because there have been a bunch of rumors that Tesla has been negotiating with the government. And most recently, they said that the factory that they plan to make that in India would be for the next gen cheaper vehicle, which would make sense in the Indian market. Mm-hmm. That they don't buy that many expensive vehicles there. Well, they buy quite a few because, I mean, it's over 1.6 billion people there or something.
I think it's 1.4, but it's
1.4. Yeah, crazy. All right, moving on from Tesla news, we have five more news items to discuss, and then we're going to jump into the comment section. So if you guys have any question for us, you can put them in the comment section right now. When I get to it in a few minutes, it can be about things that we discussed today or other topics in the EV world that you want us to address. Gonna get to it in about 15 minutes, maybe. The Polestar 3 added a variant to it, a cheaper variant this week. So when officially launching, the price was starting at $83,000 US. And now you have a new variant with the long-range dual motor with Pilot Pack, the pack is not the battery here, because all the batteries are 111 kilowatt hour. So the new base one, basically, I have issues seeing the difference here with the first two are basically exactly the same.
Spec-wise, they're
exactly the same. But you have a new version starting at $73,000,
you get the plus pack in the second one, which
I don't know exactly. It's like interior features or whatever, because you get 315 miles of range, which is great. You get 250 kilowatt charging, all-wheel drive, 489 horsepower, 0 to 60 in 5 seconds, just like the plus pack, which starts at basically $79,000. And then you have the long-range motor, pilot pack, and performance pack, which gives you a little bit more horsepower for 4.7 seconds, 0 to 60. You do lose a few miles of range with that performance at 279. That now starts at 79,400. So right below the limit for SUVs to get the... that will be produced in the U.S., right?
That's the same plan, the South Carolina one that... builds the Volvo EX90.
Mm-hmm. And then finally, you have the long-range dual motor with Pilot Plus and Performance Pack. Okay, so I need to look into what their pack things are. That is the most expensive one at $85,000. And what do you get with that?
A little bit faster, a little bit more. Oh, the extra? Yeah, I don't know.
Okay, so you get... So the Pilot Pack is lane change assist, park assist, and a heads-up display. The Pilot and Performance sound great. 25 speaker audio system designed explicitly by Bowers and Wilkins with Polestar. Okay, so it's all basically just luxury packages inside. But yeah, a cheaper price of the Polestar 2, which makes sense. It was quite expensive at $83,000 starting price.
It's still pretty expensive.
Yeah.
For not having a third row.
Yeah. Volkswagen gave us a date for the production of its ID.1, its upcoming cheap €20,000 electric vehicle that's coming. And was the ID Life. It had a bunch of different names before. That thing is not coming soon. They revealed this week at a press conference that it's coming in 2027. So don't hold your breath for it. Like it's gonna arrive around the same time, basically, a little bit later even than Tesla's next gen vehicle. Though the volume production of that vehicle is probably gonna be around that same time, 2027. So yeah, this is a bit of a bummer. But did they even commit to U.S. market for that?
I don't think they have yet.
Yeah,
we did hear that the what is it called? The GTI version of the ID.
Yeah, that they are interested in the US. Yeah,
which I really think they need to do. It would be it'd be so nice to have a hot hatch. Although Rivian's got one coming as well.
All right. Bad news or not, if you believe Fisker. So last week when we left it off with Fisker, they were in big doo-doo financially and everything, but they were saying that they were talking to a large automaker for an investment, for a partnership. They were being vague. Then later there was a Reuters report that it might have been Nissan. Now, if you've been following Nissan news this week, Nissan has been all over the place talking about partnership with this, partnership with that, and Fisker's name never came up. But today they are they announced a strategic partnership with Honda. It's not, they even announced like a electric vehicle together or anything like that, but more like charging and research and development and all that. They're going to work together on that. So I don't know if it's good or not for Fisker, but it didn't help the stock this week. Though what happened yesterday, or March 15, yeah, 14, there was a report that Fisker hired a firm to help them navigate bankruptcy. So there's rumor that they're going to file for bankruptcy. And then a few hours later, Fisker released a statement in response, and their statement is, as a matter of a company policy, Fisker does not comment on market rumors and speculation. However, Fisker often works with outside advisor, so that talking about the advisor, to help manage its business and assist in developing and executing strategies. Strategies about bankruptcy. Fisker is focused on raising additional capital. So that's the little denial of the because the first part is like they're saying we don't comment on this, and then they're like sort of like not even denying it. This is a little bit more of a denial. Fisker is focused on raising additional capital and engaging in a strategic partnership with a large automaker. The company is also continuing to pursue its shift to a dealership partnership model, which that won't save them. In both North America and Europe, the leadership team is laser focused on these efforts, even though Enric Fisker has been MIA for like a few weeks now. It's just been like a running gag in the Fisker community. It's like, where is Enric? Like, no one's seen Enric. Yeah, this is not looking good. Like, everyone is laughing. Like, they're saying, like, MKBHD killed Fisker. I don't know about that. I think Fisker killed Fisker. It didn't help for sure. Like, especially like MKBHD, if you're a fan of his, like, you follow his style. He doesn't really report on products that he don't like normally. Like, if he posts a video, it's because he likes it, there's value. He doesn't review that many vehicles. Also, so when he does, it's again because they find something very interesting on it, and this one, like, he didn't say anything that other people haven't said about the Fisker before. Like, they have some major issues with the Ocean, and he just highlighted those. So I think it's more like, obviously he has a massive reach, so I highlighted that a lot. He is extremely credible as a reviewer for especially our generation, I think. So maybe that actually resulted in a lot of cancellation. I don't know, but don't put the entire bankruptcy of Fisker on MKDVG's back. I think it was trending that way before you ever touched the Ocean.
In fact, I would say many of the points that he brought up, the software, you know, was kind of messy. Our own Jamie Dow had kind of brought those to light a little bit earlier. He wasn't as like, I think the title of the video was like, this may be the worst car I reviewed ever or something. I don't think Jamie was
the title was worse than the video. The video was like way more like, but the guy is always very nuanced and everything anyway, but the title hurt more than anything, I think.
Right.
But yeah, actually the stock kind of bounced back from that a little bit, from the note, even though like I don't understand how anyone is believing Fisker at this point, honestly. Like it went down 52% when the report of the hiring of an advisor for bankruptcy, and then it was up 42% after that announcement, that response from Fisker, which
is crazy because that's a non-denial.
Sort of. Yeah. And especially, like, I think that the biggest thing that, like, kind of gave Fisker investors some hope would be, like, the Nissan rumor last week. Right. But I would downgrade that rumor this week with Nissan announcing the Honda partnership and saying that they would work with Sony, too, and all that. Like, how many companies Nissan needs to work with? Like, like it's I don't – and how much value is there in Fisker and working with Fisker in the first place? Again, like Fisker is super cheap right now, I understand. Like, and if you want to buy it, you're going to have to buy it at a premium, I would assume. But they, again, I'm saying they come with a $1 billion convertible note or whatever. I don't remember the exact cost. So, like, you need to take over their debt too. And is it really worth that? I don't know. Well, no, I know it's not. Quote me on that, actually. It's not.
It's not.
Yeah. All right, Waymo. Waymo is making some stride. They announced this week that they are starting their service with their app fully automated rides in LA of all places. So now you can be stuck in traffic in a Waymo instead of your own car, which is nice. And they also confirmed that they're going to open in Austin, Texas, by the end of this year. So now, it's what? It's SF, Phoenix, LA. Do they have any other market? So the LA service area is going to be Santa Monica, Century City, K-Town, downtown, parts of West Hollywood. So just parts of it. Okay. Beverly Hills, Culver City. Yeah, that's a lot. That's a big part of the city.
Yeah, I mean, there's plenty of Ubers needed in LA. LA is obviously a big driving town, so... that'll go well. I think it's also interesting that Waymo's not now operating or will soon operate in Austin. So, you know, yeah. Tesla workers can get a ride to work in a Waymo. So
a real full self-driving drive where they don't have to pay attention.
Right.
They still use the I-Pace Waymo? Is it the primary vehicle they still use? Yeah.
Yeah, I-Pace. And then they had those... hybrids, the Pacifica hybrids for a while.
Yeah,
but I think it's mostly I-Pace, which is crazy.
They had a weird choice of their cars, right? The like two vehicles that kind of like didn't really pick up in the EV space, like the Pacifica and
they have
old cars also had battery recalls too.
They have a new one, a Zeekr, you know, the Chinese brand owned by Geely, I think.
Oh, really?
They got that. And that's kind of like a minivan. It's a little bit bigger.
Yeah.
That's going to be better. I think that holds like 6 or 7 people.
Yeah, Google is weird. I mean, you remember the original Google self-driving car, so it's not too much.
Yeah, they were like weird, like mini bug.
You know, they predate that. Google's car predate the Microlino, kind of a.
Yeah, that's true.
It was kind of, it was bigger than that, obviously, but still the same kind of shape a little bit. All right, this a company that you like a lot, Span, they unveiled a whole new lineup of their electrical panel this week. What do you find interesting about that, Seth?
Yeah, so Span, they make the electrical panels that everybody has in their house, like the main panel. But it's smart, so you can tell it, like, hey, if I'm getting too much power, turn off this breaker and turn off this breaker. And, you know, turn on this breaker only at night. And, you know, you can do all kinds of stuff like that. There's 32 in the one that is kind of being sold now. They just announced a 48 breaker panel, and then two smaller panels, I think a 16 and a 24. They also have one with a meter built in. So they're working with the utilities directly. So utilities will come out and send these. So what's good about that? So a lot of people have like, you know, 80 amp service coming out to their house and they're electrifying. They're getting electric vehicles. They're getting, you know, heat pumps installed, which take a lot of electricity, and they're getting rid of the oil heat or the gas heat. And, you know, theoretically, they're getting electric ovens and they're getting, you know, electric dryers and whatever. So this is a problem. And this is actually a problem that I have. I have a 200 amp service. But, you know, with the multiple electric vehicles, with the heat pumps that we put in, I'm bumping up against my 200 amp limit. Not that I'm using 200 amps at the same time. It's just I have so many different electrical items that we're hitting the limit. So, you know, I did some research on this. I've known about SPAN for a long time. I was like, all right, I need to get this because my electrician is telling me, like, instead of getting a second or third EV charger, I have to go off of one. And I was using a NeoCharge, which is kind of a splitter, for a while. Mm-hmm. But I would rather have three different chargers, and I want them to be 48 amp instead of 32 amp. So I want the most amperage I can get. Well, with the SPAN, I can say, hey, turn off my car chargers if, you know, I'm starting to get up close to the 200 amp limit. That way I don't need another 200 amp cable coming into my house, which, you know, our cables are buried and it's, you know, far from the street. So you need a trencher. It's expensive. And it was going to end up being like $10,000 or $20,000. I mean, that's quite a bit of money. And, you know, the SPAN thing is, I think they're $3,500 now, and there's a federal tax credit of, I think, $600. So it's down to $2,900, which is, you know, still a lot more than a regular panel, but you get all these, you know, incentives. And, you know, theoretically, you can tell, you know, your car charging breaker to only come on during, you know, electric, when electric's cheap. And of course, you can do that from the car, and you can do it from a lot of chargers. But this is like all in one place. So you can kind of control mm-hmm. everything from an app. And it's also good that you can see, like, hey, what is using all the electricity in this house right now?
You can adjust.
Yeah. Like, you know, if you have like an air conditioning in your attic that's going, and you're like, why is the air conditioning in the attic going right now? Just turn it off at the breaker. So it's kind of nice that you can control the whole house from anywhere in the world. You see where your solar is coming in. It controls the batteries. One kind of neat thing that it does, and we've heard kind of rumors that Tesla is going to be working with SPAN, and the CEO is the old head of Tesla Energy. But what you could do is, like, if you are using more than 200 amps, you know, coming out from your line from the street, you can invoke the Tesla Powerwall to send electricity in in addition to what's coming out. So it allows you to control a little bit more the batteries and the solar and what's happening on your home network. So anyway, I'm getting one of these. I'm getting it installed like in the next couple of weeks, and then I'm going to do a review of it.
That's cool.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I kind of need that.
Yeah, I was going to say you would be a good
candidate. I have the weirdest electrical situation in my house with like two different entries from the electric utilities. One in my garage, one which is a 400 volt entry, and then I have one, two, three different electrical panel in my main house on top of the two ones in my garage. This because my house kept getting I didn't do it. I bought the house like that, but kept getting add-ons to the house, and the guy kept doing it himself and didn't plan the electrical situation very well. So, like, when I got my power walls installed, it was, like, so complicated. Like, the guys couldn't believe it. Like, they kept having to change the plans for it because of it. It was crazy.
Yeah. All right.
All right. Let's go to the comments.
All right. Mark Webb says, I wonder how much Tesla demand is being hurt by removal of USS radar and stocks, yoke, etc., and Elon's communication style. What do you think?
Well, communication style, I can agree with. US radar, stock, I don't know, like the wider public, like the hardcore definitely think about that. But like I just talked to my Uber driver coming from the airport just now. He had a 2023 Model 3, and the guy was like all in the island. He's like, I want the island. It's looking super cool and everything. And I asked him, like, what do you think of the stock and things like that? I'm like, no, new wheels look super cool. He's like, yeah, but you know, the stalker, he didn't care. Like, I think the wider public is not that big of a deal on that. The radar, I would like to know like the exact take rate of Tesla's like autopilot, enhanced autopilot, and full self driving. Like it's like we talked a lot about full self driving because like we bought it obviously, and Elon Musk keeps saying that Tesla is worth nothing without it.
Yeah.
But the reality of it is like the take rate is pretty low on that thing. Like it's Tesla is not talking about it obviously, but like if it's over 15-20%, it would be I would be shocked. So yeah, I don't think that's a big of a Elon communication, yeah, because obviously Elon is the face of Tesla, and he keeps putting his foot in his mouth, saying some dumb things. And recently,
you excited about this Don Lemon interview Monday?
Oh yeah, that's coming out Monday, right? Yeah. Oh my god, yeah, that was another one where
I saw some clips. He did not look happy. I don't know why he was so upset.
Yeah, that was a double whammy for me because, like, one, it's dumb to, like, obviously I know people keep making the distinction between canceling the contract and canceling the show. Like, people, he didn't cancel the show. He just canceled his contract with X. Look, at the end of the day, he had a contract with, Tucker Carlson. You have a contract with Tucker Carlson where he openly amplified Tucker Carlson on X, a conservative voice, obviously. And then his idea was like, we'll take a liberal voice, Don Lemon, and offer him a show, offer him a contract, and amplify him too, so that he's going to be fair. Like, even though you have to trust that they're going to be amplified to the same level, whatever. Okay, it's going to be fair. And then as soon as he gets an interview for Elon Musk, and Elon Musk is unhappy with it, he cancels that contract. So I know he's still allowed to post on X and everything, but there's still a balance issue. And even though you can say it's still free speech because he's allowed to do it and everything, at the end of the day, if you know how X works, amplification is everything. And if you're not amplified, you might as well not be heard at all. Like it's that's how it works. So it's dumb on that, where he's being an hypocrite with on that front. And it's also dumb that if he didn't want people to see that interview, like, that whole thing is going to make more people watch an interview, because first of all, it's not just going to be on X. Now it's going to be everywhere. And people are going to just want to see it because of all the controversy.
Yeah. What happened? It. Yeah. And some of my friends were like, do you think this was done on purpose? Like, do you think Elon's just amplifying the thing? And I don't know. I don't think so.
No, because now more people are going to watch it on YouTube and right. All that, I think. Even though I'm sure that, because the X number is like you just scroll past it and like it gives you a view, just like a Facebook or something. Like it's not like YouTube, so where you have to click on it to get a view. So I'm sure that like the X numbers will still be good, and then Elon will show that with a screenshot, like, look, we still got like 5 million views on X or whatever. So like don't be surprised if that happens. But yeah, I mean, I think more people are gonna watch that, and apparently he's not happy with it. Like, he, I know that you shared with me the Kara Swisher thing. Like she apparently got a scoop on the Elon side of things. She said that Elon's representative, she got like the text from it, like, oh, they cancel that contract, whatever. Yeah. And that mentioned like is ketamine use, like that, like as if that was an important part of the interview that Elon got upset about. So before that, I didn't actually believe that much that you had a ketamine problem, because ketamine problem is like pretty hardcore in my head. Like, you're not really functional if you have a ketamine problem. I know ketamine is used in therapy now and everything, but it's or in very small doses in a therapeutic environment. But like, they're talking about abuse of ketamine, which is pretty hardcore. I never really believed that, but now I'm tempted to believe it more if talking about it really upset Elon in this interview.
Yeah, and Matthew Perry, the guy, died recently from it.
Oh, from it, that was because now this, like, if it started being more serious, the allegation of drug abuse, this should be a problem. He's the CEO of a public company. He's the CEO of a defense contractor. Like, I didn't believe it until now. I still don't believe it for a fact. We need to see the interview, whatnot. But if there is something there, now we need to be careful.
Yeah, and I think. I think they've alluded to it. Like, Elon's alluded to it. He's tweeted out things about ketamine, like being, you know, for you know, whatever. But I also think that, like, he got in trouble for the Joe Rogan smoking weed. So I can't imagine, like, I think they did a whole review or something on SpaceX.
Yeah, so but he passed that review, I think. So
right. But yeah, he probably doesn't enjoy going through those, and he probably didn't want to get into another one. All right, moving on. Over the last couple of weeks, I have perceived a shift in leadership from Tesla to Rivian, not in terms of sales, obviously, but in terms of how North American EV enthusiasts view the market.
That's true. I would agree with that. I've seen a lot more people getting excited about Rivian, excited as a thought leader in the EV space. No one is gonna doubt that Tesla is still a leader in sales, the leader as a company in terms of size and all that. But I've seen it on X too from Tesla fans attacking Rivian like crazy too.
Yep.
Which I mean that's what I've been saying for a long time. Like I hate to see it. These hardcore Elon fans are not really Tesla. They are Tesla stock fan. They are Elon fans. They are not at electric. You keep saying that we're like these people keep saying that we are anti-Tesla, anti-Elon. We're not anti-Tesla. We're pro-Tesla's mission, which makes us pro-Tesla to a degree. So keep that in mind. These people, when they trash other EVs like Rivian, like, why would you trash Rivian? They're not pro-Tesla's mission to accelerate the advent of electric vehicles and renewable energy.
All right, let's change the background. If Rivian's now the thought leader, we're going to switch it up for us then. All right. I know I canceled the Model X order for these reasons. So he's talking about the Elon's communication style, I'm assuming.
Or the lack of radar and stuff.
Oh, maybe it was both.
The yoke, it's not, well, the yoke form is not an excuse because the round wheel is standard now, but you don't get the stock. That's true.
All right. A couple of people have been asking about Mikey G from Quick Charge. I got an email from Mikey about 2 weeks ago saying he was burnt out and he's going to take a break. So I haven't heard much from him since then, but we have our own Steven on the Quick Charge podcast. I think he's doing a great job. Obviously not, you know, up to speed quite yet, but
give him a chance, people. Give him a chance.
Yeah, give him a chance. And
if you follow us on Instagram, you're already familiar with him. He's posted a video on Instagram, but
yeah,
the Quick Charge format was really much Mikey and he's trying to adapt it to his own. So you have to give him a chance.
For sure. Yeah, he's great. All right, Mark Webb, it feels to me like Hyundai is taking the lead with products like the EV9. Competitors are starting to offer faster charging rates and longer range, but Tesla doesn't seem to be improving in those areas. Yeah, I mean, the EV9 is not really the same kind of product as a...
It's not even a Kia, the EV9. Like, it's an $80,000, like, fully loaded...
Like, it's a big vehicle.
Top of the... luxury big vehicle, like
I love it, it starts at 50. I think,
yeah, it started at 50, but like you can load that thing with like it,
yeah,
it feels like an Escalade sometimes, like with all the very nice option and everything. So yeah, but yeah, it's a great product. I don't know if it's taking the lead really, like let's see how much they sell, because like the Ioniq is a great product. EV6 were a great product, but they didn't sell like terribly well. Like it's picking up now, so let's see if they get some momentum and really get behind it. But the product, I agree, is great.
And also, Hyundai isn't coming out with these like announcements, like "Hey, we're slowing down production" or "Hey, we're doing this." They're going full steam ahead, so good for them. Yeah. The Model X seems to get worse and worse. I don't know if it gets worse and worse. It probably just stays where it's at, which is, you know, it's still quite fast. Still seven-seater sometimes. I love the styling of the Ioniq 6, but I won't mess with a dealer ever again. That's a good point. Dealers are not fun to deal with. Some are okay. Most are not.
Yeah, if you have a good one, you're fine. But on average, good luck finding a good one.
Yeah. All right, agree. Dealers are big negative. There's our math. Thank you, yes. Ian. Jorg says service capacity seems much too low for actual challenges.
Depending where you are, like
yeah,
I know I can check with my on my phone on me, but check if I want to get a Tesla appointment right now.
My Model Y is having a lot of issues lately. Now our front wheel is just squeaking like super loud. And it's like a known problem, and they fixed it in later models, but ours didn't hit that until after the warranty. So it's going to be like a $600 repair, which I'm not really a fan of.
Yeah.
A friend of mine made abysmal experiences swearing to never buy a Tesla again, which I am sorry about as a Tesla owner and investor myself.
Yeah. I mean, we've heard some of those, but like this is anecdotal. Okay. He's a Hamburg, Germany. Yeah. I'm not that familiar with Tesla's service capacity and quality in Germany. But I feel for you, or for your friend.
All right, we have a stock prediction. Medi says Tesla stock is going to tank in April. It's not even going to hit that 420 number. It's 415, according to our Facebook friend. We'll have to see. Tesla service has been great for me, but I've also never had any serious issues from them.
Yeah, same. I had only a very few issues with my car and always had a great service experience. Mobile service is awesome. Mobile service is a big game changer.
All right. Hello to Club Rivian on Facebook.
Hi, hello.
I believe the Rivian R2 and R3 will significantly erode demand for the 3 and Y, assuming Rivian can ramp production enough. I mean, we're talking 2 years, 3 years
from now. Yeah. R3, you don't even know when that is. R2 volume production is still several years away.
All right. We have a direct at Fred. Come on, Fred. Some people are overconfident crossing the street. Should we sue crosswalk lights for the same reason?
That's a bad comparison.
Yeah, it's not
talking good. About not great. An active driving technology versus like a street.
Electric Brian says Tesla needs to call autopilot adaptive cruise control with lane keep assist. I mean,
like every other automaker out there.
Yeah. Remind me again of the status of FSD4. All new Teslas have it? Cybertruck, in my opinion, FSD needs higher resolution cameras, and it's unclear when they're what they are using today. Well, Cybertruck doesn't have any kind of FSD.
Yeah, nothing active right now. But Tesla did a camera upgrade in the latest generation of the sensor suite, which I don't know. Since then, I haven't heard any expert really hammering on that. I know that the previous one, there might be an argument for it. So I'm even saying that Tesla will need a retrofit for the cameras that was in the 3.0 sensor suite. But I don't think that's a concern at this point right now for the 4.0. But yeah, in the CT, there's like sets and there's nothing. Well, the hardware is there. There's no software for it.
Right. All right. Scott Carter says, I don't think autopilot is misleading. And an airplane autopilot assists the pilot. You will never want to see your pilot back in the cabin watching a movie. To keep the lawyers away, call it cruise control.
Yeah, I mean, we've heard that a lot. That's the argument that people have been using. I think it's fair. I'm not saying you're wrong there. I think it's a combination of the name, of the communication, of Elon's comments. I think the entire thing, like, if you are like us, if you're a Tesla owner and you have autopilot, and you get someone that's not really familiar with Tesla in your car, and or even a brand new owner of a Tesla vehicle. One of the first questions they ask about it, like, oh, you have the full self-driving package. Oh yeah, you can drive. It can drive itself. Like they assume that. Like it's just something that gets into the zeitgeist kind of thing.
All right, Michael Smithers says ship Model 2 East and Model 3 and Y. I think he meant West between India and China and keeps the ships full both ways. That'd be funny. Yeah. Tesla faces scrutiny after Angela Chow death in Model X. Report that family does not fault Tesla. Yeah, that was kind of a weird one.
Seth and I had a weird conversation about that. Some miscommunication. I thought Seth went full conspiracy theory on me, and I was like starting to get worried for him. I think there was some confusion about that from the Tesla community, where some people thought that there was a new
Model X
shifter.
The
more recent Model shifter where you have to shift on the screen, or the automatic shifter, if you will, rather than the stock. But she had a 2020 Model S with the stock, so it was just unfortunate, very unfortunate, terrible way to die. Mistake that people do with the stock. It happens, especially people like that are not used to trucks, because this is a gear selection system that's more popular with trucks. So she admitted to her friend that it's something that she has a problem with, that she made mistake with that before. For those people who don't know, she put it in reverse instead of drive, and she reversed into her pond and drowned in the car, which is a horrific way to die.
Yeah, apparently it took like an hour and they were trying to get her out. It's just really horrible. Yeah. All right, moving on. Mike the Car Geek, Waymo is keeping Jaguar in business. Yeah, I think that's interesting. I wonder how many of the Jaguars I-Paces that are out there are in Google's hands. The downward machine, it's frustrating to see homeowners talking about second and third chargers. Sorry about that. And so many apartment dwellers can't get one. Don't know what to tell you. You know, we have a teenage son who's going to be driving a Chevy Bolt soon. So we're looking at a third charger. Sorry.
Yeah, I know it's frustrating, especially like I've heard also for condo organization like HOA trying to convince your HOA to let you install a charger. These things are unfortunate. I think there's going to be a momentum at some point where this is going to be less of a problem. But I know right now it's not the easiest thing to do.
All right. Well, Robert Palmer says it was got ya journalism. And a smear job. He doesn't have to answer questions over and over. Some things are private. So talking about the Don Lemon interview, I guess. So it sounds like we might have a big Elon fan here. And he takes regular drug tests. I guess he's on the inside. Come on, guys.
Yeah, some people said that, but like I've looked into the regulation for like defense contractor and like this. I don't think that's that much of a regular thing.
Mark Webb has a interesting, I guess, last comment here. Elon has become such an unpleasant person over the last 2 years, assuming, and blaming this on drug use is almost a kinder explanation than accepting that he's always been a dick.
Yeah. I had the whole tweet this last week about that, like kind of realization of like, in my head, I've been thinking like my opinion has changed on Elon in the last few years. Because he has changed in the last few years, or I kind of opened my eyes. I haven't seen that he's been an asshole all this time. Like I'm not saying that that's the case. I'm saying that it might be the case, and I just haven't seen it. So yeah, I don't know the truth on that, but it probably a combination of both. I would assume like he also changed a lot in the last few years. I mean, my theory has always been that he's addicted to social media and. It's kind of a situation where he's it's kind of a drug addict with 175 million drug pusher keep pushing him in drugs because right. He's addicted to social media and he has a giant following on it that keeps attracting it. So, and obviously he's also in a weird situation where he's extremely influential both on and off social media through his wealth, through his connection, through his companies. So it's a very weird situation. I think the only like way out for him is like he has to delete Twitter, which Ooh. Is impossible for him now because his wealth is now attached to that too. Right. So he's financially incentivized to keep his social media addiction. It's such a screwed up situation. I mean, I kind of feel bad for him to a degree because I could put myself in this situation. I don't know if I would be able to pull out of that either. Yeah. I would be, but I don't know. Yeah. It's a weird one. It's crazy. Anyway, let's end on this note, on a positive note. Let's hope that Elon's get a hold of his social media addiction. We all have issues in our life that we could do better on, and that's probably the main one from Elon. All right. I appreciate every single one. There's apparently 1,000 people watching right now over all platforms. That's awesome. I appreciate every single one of you. If you do enjoy the show, you can give us a quick like, book that stream up. It takes a second to do and helps the show a lot. You can also you can subscribe, hit the notification button to know when we go live, though it's most of the time at 4 p.m. Friday Eastern time. When we're not traveling all over the place to get you all the news. Speaking of why I was traveling all this week is for a lunch that I cannot talk about, but I will be able to Monday morning, early morning. So when you guys wake up on Monday, you're not only going to have that Don Lemon interview, you're going to have a brand new EV that we're going to discuss. And if you're listening on your podcast app, you can give us a 5-star rating. That also helped the show tremendously. And we appreciate every single one of you that does it. All right. Have a safe weekend. I'm going to see you next week. Bye-bye.